I could not believe that 68% of the Irish people voted to legalize abortion. I wondered what kind of educational formation had the Catholic Church been about that was the result. I find it unbelievable, and I pray that the resulting law will at least have a decent conscience clause in it, because it's going to put a lot of pressure on the medical system.
You are a theologian who's written about the respect from a Christian perspective of the centrality of the dignity of human life. Is that the way you would have argued had you been here in regard to this debate?
No. I think the pro-choice, pro-life alternative is a disaster. That's the production of the American media to simplify an alternative. What you needed to talk about is why you're having children at all. And that's what in America was never really broached. I think the abortion culture in America is a vote of no confidence in ourselves. People do not believe that they have a culture and a moral sensibility worth passing on to future generations. The birth rate among whites in America is now not reproducing itself as a population. And I think that's very telling. So I think how to reframe the abortion issue as one having to do with what kind of people do you need to be to have children in a morally flourishing manner is what should have been talked about.
Is there a chicken and egg there? Because are people voting in that way because of the way the society actually is, that it is morally bankrupt in a lot of aspects, so they don't feel they can bring children into it?
Well, it's not for me to characterize Ireland, but I certainly think that's at least part of the problem in America. Why are you having children in the first place? Where they can consume at a higher level than you can consume? That's not happening anymore in America, by the way. That one of the challenges is going to be that children of fairly well-off folk in America are going to have trouble reproducing the wealth of their parents. And that's going to be, I think, a real challenge to American politics, because it's going to produce an extraordinary reactionary politics, which is already happening.
Yeah. In Ireland, I'm wondering, given the nature of the exit interviews that were done on both sides, on the yes and the no, a high percentage expressed that they were unhappy, that it wasn't a choice they made easily. They didn't feel, well, this is a clear-cut decision, say perhaps like it was in the gay marriage referendum.
I must admit, I don't know if I trust those expressions of ambiguity. It seems to me that it can easily be interpreted as a kind of moral saving of my commitments, but nonetheless, I'm still going to vote pro-choice.
Can you talk to me about your own work regarding the whole area of pacifism and nonviolence in the Christian tradition?
Well, I don't like the language of nonviolence because it's not violence. I don't like the language of pacifism because it's so passive. My way of putting it is Christians are called to peace not because we think it's a strategy to rid the world of war, but in a world of war, as faithful followers of Christ, we cannot imagine being anything other than nonviolent, to be against war. And that means that if we are truthful in our nonviolence, we may well make the world more violent, because the world does not want the order that is its violence shown up for what it is. Namely, it really is a form of violence that hides itself from itself.
In what way?
Because if you're well enough off, you oftentimes look very peaceful. And so how you discover in your own life the violence that you've gotten used to is always a deep challenge.
So are you referring there to the violence of people who oppress other people without physical force, but who exploit them or use them as labor slaves almost or whatever?
No, I was thinking more of like everyday life. Where do you find oftentimes the deepest violence? People who say they love one another. I usually mean, I love you because I think you'll fit into my way of life. So exactly how the coercive aspects of our lives are oftentimes missed because they're confused with love.
So your vision of how we treat ourselves and treat those we love and how we treat our communities, if we really look at that from the Christian perspective, you believe that is a radical, I know we have to use the word, you don't like it, but non-violent stance. Have you another word that you've thought of? Because you think words are very important, don't you?
I do. Words are everything. I like the word peace. I like the word discipleship. I mean, people oftentimes think you need to justify violence. I oftentimes say, have you thought about what that means for the disciples facing the crucifixion? Shouldn't they have run back to Galilee and gotten up the Galilean revolutionary force and gone back to Jerusalem and said, they're fixing to kill an innocent man. Let's liberate him through violence. Jesus didn't ask for that. So exactly our commitment to nonviolence as Christians has everything to do with the crucifixion, where God took on the Son what we deserved, but didn't pass the violence on.
I can see that. I think where I would have difficulties, and I think where people sometimes have difficulties in say, something like, let's go to the Second World War. I'm sure you've had this 100 times, but it is a difficult area where you say, well, do we all stand up and say, march on, Hitler?
What I oftentimes respond to that observation is, who fought in Hitler's armies? Catholics and Lutherans, who were brought up exactly on that question. I'm sure if I were that age, I would have probably gone into the army. I think it was seemed so overwhelmingly true. I'm just now trying to say, when did we ever learn to say no? How do Christians learn to say, no, I'm not going to use military force to achieve what you're calling justice? American Christians are certainly more American than their Christianity should allow. And so I say, before I die, which is not that far in the future, I hope to convince every American Christian we have a problem with war. I don't care whether they're just warriors or pacifists. I just want them to know we've got a problem with war. How did we ever lose that sense that Christians have a problem with war?
Yeah, I can understand that. I see what you're saying in that regard. I suppose as somebody, you know, when you travel around Europe and see monuments to places where, you know, small groups of just ordinary people, really brave, got together in the resistance and risked their lives and were tortured to stop something that was an incredible evil that was being marched. I mean, I agree with the bigger picture that we have to look at where this comes from, why our obsession with it. But for the people who do something like this, it's maybe sometimes easier to sit back and say, well, I won't.
The issue of precedent is extremely powerful. Namely, particularly if you're from the southern part of the United States, you go to war because your grandfather did, and you don't want to dishonor grandfather. Somewhere we've got to say, we can honor Granddad without thinking we have to reproduce what he did or she did in terms of fighting for the defeat of the Axis powers. I mean, what a lot of people don't get is the United States only became the United States in World War I. Up until that time, you hadn't reintegrated the South. World War I became the construction of America as a country because the Southerners, who are natural-born killers,
Only the Southerners?
Express a special pride in it. The Southerners, as natural-born killers, were so desperate to kill, we even went and did it for the Yankees. How to say no to that is one of the great challenges before us. And, of course, that has everything to do with the gun culture in America. I mean, I was a Southerner. When I was 10, I got my Roy Rogers BB gun. When I was 12, I got my .22. When I was 14, I got my .410. These are shotguns. .410 is a shotgun. And you grow up hunting, and you learn how to use a weapon. But I can't now have a weapon in the house at all.